Early in the autumn of 1973, it became clear that an Arab troop buildup was occurring both in the south along the Egyptian border and along the Golan Heights on the Syrian frontier. Thus, Israel was faced with the threat of another Arab attack. This situation forced Golda to confront what was probably the most difficult crisis she would face as prime minister. She explained the situation to the American Jewish community in a speech at Washington, D.C. on November 2, 1973.
Saturday morning, we were at war. The war really broke out at 2 o'clock. But early in the morning, at 4 o'clock in the morning, we had definite information that war will take place on both borders, Syria and Egypt, simultaneously. We had to take a very serious decision that carried with it a terrible responsibility. We knew that within a few hours, our men on both sides of the border, north and the south, will be facing the tanks and MiGs and the missiles with which these two countries were well provided by one of the two greatest powers in the world. The chief of staff came in to describe to me what the advantages would be if we would make the first strike. I'm sure you appreciate it wasn't a simple decision to make. I took the decision, which was later supported by the entire cabinet, that knowing exactly what the decision means, this decision we will abide by. For a very simple reason. We knew that after a war on the battlefront comes another battle on the diplomatic front. We had no illusions. We knew this would not be a simple war. We knew not only whom we were facing, we knew what we were facing. The men that do the shooting are Egyptians and Syrians. But the mass of material that they have, the tanks, the missiles, the guns, the MiGs, in huge numbers, this was Russian. And we knew that when the battle would be over and the dead counted and the families notified of husbands, sons, and to a very large number, grandsons this time, and the number of maimed, when all this is over, we will have to face the world, the good world, civilized world. And we will be taken to account why the first strike. Why didn't we wait? Maybe if we had waited, maybe all this was just a show and it would never have happened.
And so began what were probably the worst days of her life. Israel was unprepared for the attack. On October 5th, 1973, Yom Kippur, Egyptian forces crossed the Suez and advanced into the Sinai, while at the same time, Syrian troops pushed the Israelis back on the Golan Heights. Israeli casualties were high in those early days of the war. Golda continues with her remarks to the American Jewish community.
I think we judged rightly. We paid for it. But I still believe that this was the right decision. During the war, we were in need of replacement of tanks and planes and other war material. We got it from your government. I said last night at the dinner with members of your government present that I believe for generations children will be told of the miracle of those immense planes from the United States landing every 15, 20, 30 minutes and bringing in the material that spent life to our people. I don't know whether it would have been so simple to get it had our decision on that Yom Kippur morning been different. This was the cruelest wars of all. The Egyptians and the Syrians have been well provided. They have been trained in the best of Soviet school of wars, how to conduct wars. They have been trained in sending thousands of soldiers, practically suicide groups only in the thousands. Only countries that have no worry about the life of their soldiers can follow a military tactic of that kind.
October 23, 1973, 2 weeks into the war, Golda delivered an address to the American Jewish community. Her voice was solemn, tinged with sadness and fatigue. But underneath it was an air of confidence, confidence that Israel would surely win and that Israel would survive. She spoke of what it was that motivated the Israeli soldier on the field of battle.
The story someday will be told that it's not a figure of speech. What happens to a small people surrounded by tens and tens and tens of millions, aided by one of the two greatest powers in the world? What happens to young men when they know how few they are, they know how many they are facing, they know how great the arsenal of destruction is on the other side? They know all this, but they know one thing that is basic. The life of their country, of their people, of their dearest ones, maybe the life existence of the entire Jewish people, depends upon them. Each one believes it depends upon him. And believe me, my friends, there are stories of heroism, of sacrifice, that I doubt very much if they have ever been matched, can be matched anywhere else.
Simcha Dinitz comments again.
Despite the shock of the Arab attack and the early losses, Golda never lost faith in the Israeli forces. On both fronts, the Israelis drove the Arab armies back. The airlift from the United States finally came through. This was a formidable struggle in Washington, conducted and directed by Golda Meir. I remember she used to call me at all hours of the day and night, sometimes at 3 o'clock in the morning, She called and said, call the Pentagon and ask them to load on the planes this type of weapon or another type of weapon. And I would say to her, Golda, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Everybody's asleep here. She said, call Kissinger and tell him he can sleep after the war. And that's the way we worked day and night. And 72 hours after the decision in principle by the President of the United States, the massive airlift began to move. Then, immediately following this, there was the daring landing of the Israeli troops behind the Egyptian lines and the encirclement of the Egyptian Third Army was finally completed.
Henry Kissinger comments about those times and about Golda.
We had a concern of a common destiny. I never pretended that the fate of Israel was not a matter of very profound worry to somebody who lost 13 members of his family in concentration camps. Simcha and I had to deal with each other as representatives of two sovereign states. But we also had to deal with each other as representatives of a community of concerns. After the Yom Kippur War started, when the future of Israel hung in the balance, I don't know how many times a day Simcha and I talked to each other. I know he began to break me down by calling me at 3 o'clock every morning. And it went on from there. There have been many debates about who did what at what point. Some of them a little strange, because to make a debate about whether it should have taken 48 hours to get the whole airlift command of the United States to deliver supplies in a war in which the United States was not participating is a peculiar form of discussion. The fact is, Simcha was the representative who negotiated this, who recalled us constantly to our duties. Simcha was the man who was the focal point for Golda during that terrible crisis. And Simcha was the man with whom we discussed the prospects of peace after the worst danger was over. Nobody can yearn for peace more than the people of Israel. Nobody can have a greater commitment to live 4 months in acceptance and 4 months without the fear of constant aggression, which has been the destiny of the state of Israel. On no issue have I found a greater commitment. We always thought, and I still believe, that Israel is a spiritual event in addition to a physical reality. It was sustained by the idealism of those who entered a wilderness, inspired by faith, and built a nation. And Golda, whom all of us here have loved, never tired of telling me, as she must have told you, that it is that spirit that must never be jeopardized. There are a few people in everybody's life who give one strength by their convictions and by their integrity and by their dedication. President Assad once said to a journalist that the thing that bothered him about me was that I had a sort of a passionate love for Golda. And he happened to be right.
Again, as in the past Arab-Israeli wars, when the Arab armies began to crumble, the Arabs and their Soviet backers demanded an immediate ceasefire to prevent an overwhelming defeat. Israel finally agreed to the ceasefire, and the U.S. Secretary of State, Kissinger, began his shuttle diplomacy, which eventually led to troop disengagements and prisoner exchanges on both fronts. Again, pressure was put on Israel to make concessions to the Arabs.
The winter following the 1973 war was a period of national trauma, of great soul-searching for Israel. What had gone wrong? Why weren't Israeli forces prepared for the attack which took so many Israeli lives? Many people blamed Golda's cabinet for the lack of readiness. The war and the ensuing debate was, needless to say, a great strain on Golda. She was worn out both physically and emotionally. While her party received the most votes in the elections at the end of 1973, the opposition had grown stronger. She knew she would have a difficult time forming a new coalition government. Despite the many letters of support for her from all over Israel, Golda resigned as prime minister on April 10, 1974. However, she still was very active. Golda was a powerful speaker. She captivated her audience. Perhaps it was in the speech before the Israel Bonds Conference in Miami in 1973, on Israel's 25th birthday, that Golda best described the reality that Israel represents to the rest of the world.
Today, for the last 25 years, nobody hears these two words together, a Jewish refugee. There's no Jew in the world that needs to be a refugee. There's no Jew in the world that needs to feel that he's homeless. There's no Jew in the world that cannot live or does not want to live in the place where he is, that does not know where to go to. Would tens of thousands of Jews in a year and a half from Russia be out and going anywhere else? What gives the strength to these young men and women, the third generation of this kind of rule in Russia? The third generation in homes where very, very many of them, the word Jew was not heard. I heard a Jew that came from Russia at a meeting saying, my son knew that he was a Jew at the age of 29. I saved him from knowing that he is Jewish. It is not easy, even there, for somebody to be Jewish. And only when I decided that we would go to Israel, I disclosed the secret to him, that he is a Jew. What is it that gives these young people the courage, the audacity, to struggle for their right? And what their right, they say in one single sentence, we are Jews, there is a Jewish state, we want to be part of our people and part of our country. It's as simple as all that.
Golda was deeply concerned not only that Jews from all over the world should have a home, but that once home, they should form a unified and integrated society. In a speech to the National Council of Jewish Women in 1968, she said,
but the problem is, how do we integrate people that have been privileged, Jews that have been privileged to live in countries of 20th century culture and development, and people that have come from backward countries where sometimes one believes they live in 17th century. How do we make out of this one people? And there is no doubt that among the things that the people that have come to us from Asian and African countries, from Arab countries, among all that our Jewish brethren have missed there is the question, is the matter of education. And we cannot allow ourselves, and you have grasped this problem so well and so thoroughly, that this will not be the Israel that we hear and that Jews all over the world want it to be, if we will not be able to breach this gap of education between those that have been born and grown up in Israel and those that have come to us from the Western world.
Golda believed that a strong Jewish education is essential to ensure the survival of Jews who live outside of Israel. Golda expressed her views to Hadassah on this important topic.
I think that the major task that faces us in the world today is the Jewish education of the young generation. Because Jews in the past have suffered of physical destruction. The most terrible example of it is what happened during the Second World War. But the pogroms in Tsarist Russia and in many other places in the world. Today, in the free world, the danger is not of physical destruction. There's no danger of pogroms in the United States or anything of that kind. But there is a danger of assimilation. There is a danger of running away from the Jewish people. There is a danger of being ignorant where we stem from and what this is all about. And the fact that there is a state of Israel, that there is an independent Jewish state, does not make up for it.
Golda worked extremely hard as prime minister. She was 70 years old, but she still managed to put in 16 hours a day, if not more. Her life wasn't entirely all work, however, for Golda possessed a remarkable sense of humor. Elie Wiesel recalls.
She, in the meantime, became prime minister, and when she came to the United States on an official visit to see her friend Nixon, she also came to see us, and we had arranged a gathering of writers, poets, professors with her, and she charmed everybody. At the end of 2 or 3 hours, there were no more questions. It was a serious moment. We discussed Vietnam. Should Israel support? Should Israel encourage dissent? And then she said, are there no more questions? One novelist, a good humorist, suddenly said, yes, Mrs. Mayer, I have one. And since he was a bachelor, he simply said, Mrs. Mayer, would you marry me? And Golda, tongue-in-cheek, said, would you be in trouble if I said yes? And of course, we all burst out in laughter. And the mood was restored, and she didn't marry him.
Billy Graham was a good friend of Golda Meir. He reflects on his experiences with her.
But I considered her one of the greatest people that I ever had the privilege of knowing. And the way I came to know her was very interesting, because I was preaching in Jordan, and I had been invited to preach in Israel, and there was a big controversy as to whether we would be allowed to have an auditorium in Haifa. And Mr. Ben-Gurion was in Washington at the time, and apparently he had to make the decision. She was then the foreign secretary. And when I crossed over the bridge that divided Jerusalem, several score newsmen were there, because it was headlines in the press. And a State Department of the State of Israel asked me if I would defer any statement until I talked to the foreign secretary. I went to her home and was her guest there.
And it was one of the largest press conferences they said up till that time held in Jerusalem. And I told them I had not come to proselyte them, as they were afraid that I was there to do. I said, I've come to thank you for proselyting me, because I gave my heart to a Jew who was born here in Nazareth in your own country. And they smiled at that and were very kind to me. And that was the beginning of a wonderful friendship. And on one of the state dinners at the White House that we, my wife and I attended when she was the guest of honor, we noticed that in the receiving line, I was the only one she kissed. And I think a lot of Jewish people wondered why.
In November 1977, an event occurred which seemed to move her long frustrated dream of peace a little closer to becoming a reality. President Anwar Sadat of Egypt traveled to Jerusalem to address the Knesset. He was the first Arab head of state to visit Israel, and his visit led to direct negotiations between the two governments. This was the prerequisite for peace that Golda had always called for. And while she was no longer in government, President Sadat asked to meet her. When he did, this was part of the exchange that took place.
Mr. President, we do not want to be shot at, and believe me, we do not want to shoot. And Mr. President, as a grandmother to a grandfather, may I give you a little present for the new granddaughter. And thank you for your present that you have given me.
For the last 12 years of her life, including her entire prime minister years, the Israeli public and the world remained unaware that Golda suffered from lymphoma. That was the way she was. She received treatment regularly during those 12 years. It was her own private struggle. Why bother anyone else with it? On December 8, 1978, in Jerusalem's Hadassah Hospital, she died. Israel and the world mourned a great leader, a great heroine.
Hail, Molei Rachamim, Shochein Vamromim, Hamtzei Menucho Nechono, Al kanfei hashchino. Shavar Maras Golda Basr Moshe Yitzchak Shehalecha Leolama.
Golda never lived to see the day of peace. History has often shown that others must complete a goal. In biblical history, Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt, took them through the desert for 40 years, but died before they entered the Promised Land. Only a few months after Golda's death, we have reached the first peace treaty between Israel and Egypt. Even though a permanent peace with all her Arab neighbors is still lacking, Israel can now address herself more to the many problems that consumed most of Golda's life: housing, education, social welfare, and a better quality of life for Israelis.
In Golda's final speech in the United States on November 12, 1977, in Dallas, Texas, she said,
"Look, people, I was going to say 30 years from now I'll come and we'll talk about this meeting. But I've always been a realist. I don't think I'll be able quite to make it. But what I do wish for myself and for you, for the Jewish people all over the world, and for Israel, that I'll still be alive at least one day to get this message to you good, fine, wonderful people. We've made it. There is peace in Israel."
The rebuilding and development of Israel was Golda's life. Golda Meir will always live on if her work, ideas, and hopes are carried out. We have all been inspired by her. Let us continue what she began.
Hebrew can be fun. Lesson number one. Listen to your more, I'm your teacher.
What a teacher!
Bevakasha means please. You can learn with ease. Shalom means peace, and it's so nice to meet you.